We're going to call this meeting to order at 5:31, and first up is Lee Shurtleff, and he's not here. So we'll move right to the sheriff, and he's not here. Who is here?
Lee's here.
No one. Huh? Monday. Tuesday. I have an announcement from Kevin, and if you have resolutions for next Monday's meeting, which is at 6 p.m., get them to administration by 4 o'clock tomorrow afternoon on your first round of voting meeting.
What?
Yeah.
We aren't limiting it to
Monday.
We aren't limiting resolutions or motions to written in advance, are we?
No, I'm just...
Go ahead, Kevin.
I would like to get any OTR changes you might have by tomorrow so I can inform the departments that need to be there for Monday, and I can put together a schedule. If you have additional ones that come in after that, we'll address those at the following voting meeting.
I just want to make sure if I want to bring a motion and I haven't submitted a written motion ahead of time, I'm not going to be precluded from doing that.
You want to bring it Monday night?
Possibly.
Would that be fair to the departments?
It would be whatever we're talking about. We're going to go through and talk about...
Well, all right. Let me put it this way. We would appreciate it very much if you would put your motions in ahead of time, out of respect to the department, so that we may contact the department and let them know that the motion is there and that they may want to show up and defend it or whatever.
Well, I certainly understand that, but in the past, I know there have been times when we have just gone through the list, and if they knew theirs were going to come up for possible motions, then they appeared.
I think that's going to continue, Mike.
Because we're going through the list.
Same format. It's just I want to be able to get them the information.
And I don't have a problem with having advance notice on these things, but I don't want to be precluded.
You're not going to be precluded.
All right. That's all I wanted to know. Thank you.
However, I agree with that sentiment, but tomorrow afternoon is really not likely to happen. I mean, I understand your goal. If there's a way to...
I sent an email last Wednesday.
I know, Kevin. A lot of us are dealing with a lot of other stuff, too. So if it's possible to, at least have that, say, by Friday morning.
Okay.
I mean,
all right.
Friday morning. Because department heads know the budget, these meetings are coming up. If we have something to you by Friday morning, then you have time to say, okay, Lee, there's going to be something on your motion come Monday night. Just from personal experience, I haven't had a chance to look at it from that point of view, and Friday morning would make a big difference.
Okay. I'll do the best I can to let the departments know.
Carol, is it on the same topic?
On this topic. I have a question about whether, when you say we're going through the list, are you talking about we're going through the list in some kind of alphabetical order?
No, the list that he had.
When I get sent suggestions to change OTRs, whoever sends their list to me first will be the first one on the agenda for the next meeting. And if I was giving a deadline, so if there were additional ones that were added, it'd be fine if they're added, just we wouldn't address them until the next meeting.
Okay, I mean, in the past, I've been here with under different systems where we either go in order that they were submitted or we've gone in some kind of order that groups together some of them.
It is based on order of that they're submitted, and then if there are two that are like, those two will be addressed together or one right after the other. So if there are two that affect one department, those will be addressed first.
Regardless of what order they're handed in.
I know it's hard to think about the past sometimes, but we kind of want to do this, and we will be open to other resolutions for sure as they come in the process. Frank?
Jim or Kevin, there isn't a formal list of department review
the list will be generated, if I understood what you just said, the list will be generated by whatever we submit as prospective changes.
Correct. Correct. And I sent an email last Thursday with an Excel spreadsheet in it. If you don't want to do that, you can just call me and tell me what they are, and I'll add it to the list.
Okay. Are we going to? I like Martha's suggestion though about Friday. I mean, is it possible that we can?
Sure. I'll send an email out to the departments and let them know that there may be up till Friday things coming in for next week.
Yeah, and as Mike said or asked, if as a result of anything we do on Monday, there are more questions.
Additional ones can be added to the list, but they won't be addressed till the following meeting. Right.
Okay.
Thank you. Kevin, let me ask you this. I realize that you said tomorrow at 2. Wouldn't Thursday make a bit more sense so that you're not here on Saturday preparing these things? How about the end of the workday Thursday? So at least you would have Friday to deal with it. Nate, you had your hand up.
Kevin, how many have you received so far?
Two.
Two lists or two items?
One item and then a group of items. One group of items to be voted on as a group, and one single.
Lee, you're up. Go ahead. Let me just remind you that we will take questions at the end of each department's presentation. Go ahead, Lee.
Thank you, Jim. Good evening. I will run through the initial numbers that we have. I think I'm following the format that you've seen thus far from the other departments, and I just offer that you won't see much here tonight that you haven't seen or heard from me over the last 2 or 3 years through the budget process. The recommended budget in working with the county administrator's office showing the difference from 2011 to 2012 modified to recommended reflects the recommendation for full funding for the budget that's been proposed, and it's a maintenance of effort budget maintaining current staffing levels and current activities, no program expansions nor major projects. And the bulk of the change, the increase in expense, relates, as it does probably to most other departments, to the increased cost and fringe benefits, a loss of some funding through the State Health Department, as well as items related to the maintenance of the communication system. Full-time equivalencies, again, staffing is what drives the bottom line to the budget for the Department of Emergency Response. We're operating at one less FTE this year than we were 2 years ago, and with the initial 0% scenario that we were looking at, there was a potential of 5 positions being impacted. With a recommendation to fund to the cap level, we would be looking at a reduction in staffing of 1.5 equivalencies. And I'll talk a little bit further along the line of what that would translate into. Over-target requests that are supported by the property tax cap, initially to get to those 4.5 to 5 full-time equivalencies, we were looking at a loss of 2 emergency services dispatchers, elimination of a part-time assistant director for emergency medical services and emergency management, and a reduction in hours for my position. Additionally, to get to cover difference between the 2.9 expense or a property tax cap to go from there to 5.4% would require additional elimination of a half-time emergency services dispatcher or its equivalency and an assistant director's job for fire and emergency management. What it all comes down to meet the targets, to meet the proposed caps, is a reduction in people. For us to meet a 0% target, just for an example, you would be looking at $2.150 million. Just current staffing alone, including fringe benefits, is 2.140. I have $10,000 to work with just to keep at a no-growth rate. Factors driving the budget, loss of health department funding. For years, we have probably close to 20 years, 18, 19, somewhere in that range, we've had state health department funding that reimburses us for the cost of emergency medical services administration. That was eliminated in this year's budget, took effect July 1st. With the communications system, and I'll come back to this point, we also saw the end of contracts that were negotiated 5 years ago, which gave us some coverage through the initial procurement of the radio system that was covered for a three-year period that now comes due next year, maintenance on parts of the radio system. Also, we've also implemented the computer-aided dispatch network over the past year, and there are licenses related to the mobile data portion and records management that now have transferred from the ITS budget into my budget for future maintenance. Those costs together are about $50,000. We also, when we look to the revenues that the department creates, they essentially, they're between $900,000 and $1 million a year. They come from the surcharge revenues, rentals on the towers for co-locating private entities, and also some reimbursements that come through way of the State Emergency Management Office. Those items together, as well as sales tax agreement with the city, create essentially the same $900,000 to $1 million yearly that offsets the cost of operating the communication system. Bottom line is, when we get done, those revenues can only be applied from the surcharges toward the maintenance of the system. There is a restriction in state law. You cannot use those to offset personnel. We do our best to raise revenues to meet all other costs, but when it comes to our target budget, it's the local tax dollars that fund the personnel costs, personnel and fringe benefits. One thing I want to note, that for at least 6 years running, this budget proposes no equipment. It's a zero line. Everything that we've done over the past few years to maintain equipment has been covered either through capital program dedication of funds or through a leveraging of reimbursements or grants. And unfortunately, our ability to go out and find grants at the state and federal level are being reduced on a yearly basis. Program impact, the only place we have to look when it comes to meeting the increased costs or meeting the targets is through a reduction in personnel. And I had to weigh very heavily going through this budget process if I had to lose four or five people, or if we could reduce that to two or three people, where would you go? And really it comes down to a choice between program support or being able to operate the 911 center. And as I've told you time and time again, our call volumes continue to increase, the demands upon the center continue to increase, and there comes a point where I can't throw dispatchers out as the alternative, reducing shifts and so on. It really comes down to, can you answer the phones or can you support the programs? Answering the phones takes priority. And that's why this year you see some suggestions that if we needed to cut, we would have to look to the programs. That restricts, of course, our ability to develop and implement emergency management plans, to be able to carry out the provisions of the state fire mobilization program, training programs for volunteers. It relates to how we can recover from the unexpected. I think that really what it comes down to me is the capacity that we have to absorb the emergencies. I spoke today, Joe was at the meeting with the Emergency Planning Committee, just as an example, we were declared as part of the recent tropical storms as one of six counties that were part of the FEMA declaration. And we've got losses in the county of somewhere between $500,000 to $1 million, depending on how engineering studies come back on some of the major projects, roads and bridges. And there are numerous projects that now we will have to work with the municipalities as well as our own county highway department to guide toward reimbursement, as well as reimbursement for all of the emergency response activities that took place. That requires people in our program areas to help guide those processes. And it's a capacity that's not large, but certainly a part of what we do. Moving forward, as I mentioned, the difference between the property tax cap and the 5.4 scenario leaves us at the 1.5 positions mark. I guess at this point I don't have any more that I can really offer except to answer your questions that you may have on the detailed budget submissions.
That's fine. Brian, I saw your hand.
Yep, thanks. Lee, in both of your OTR requests, you have the assistant emergency medical or management center director. Is that the position that's currently being done by Brian Wilbur?
No.
No?
No, those are, that's a 1.5 equivalency. There's a full-time person that is assistant director for fire and emergency management, and then there's a half-time person who is assistant director and does EMS and a portion of the emergency management. And that position or part of that position was funded through the health department dollars previously. The person that holds the half-time position is one who is retired from a position with a hospital and does not receive health benefits, does not participate in the state retirement program. So the true cost of that half-time position is really far less than what's incorporated into the budget because of the fringe benefit factors we use.
Okay, so the position that Brian Wilbur is now filling is one of the pieces that the consultants are going to be looking at, and I think they're just about going or maybe are going. Or
that's correct. We're about ready to make a selection.
And I know we've had discussions before, and it's been our... at least for some of us, it's been our belief that the difference between what we had paid the person previously and what we would need to pay the new person coming in might be significantly more. And is that in the budget? And that's either one of you.
That's a potential we've discussed. The position remains in the target budget, but funded at the 2010-2011 levels. It does not account for any potential increase.
Okay, so if that were to occur, that's something that you'd need to come back.
That's exactly right.
Okay. Right.
Martha Frank.
So is that the communications center manager?
Yes, it is.
Okay. How would we come back to do that after we've passed the budget?
As we do with other mid-year adjustments, we probably will. First of all, we come back and get your okay to upgrade the position. But we would also have to come back for a draw on contingency in 2012 to pay for the additional amount and then build it presumably into the 2013 budget.
Okay. Could you remind me of the time frame on the consultant study? How long that you expect that will go?
We would, our goal is to have a study back by the end of the year, have a final job description put through the civil service system in January and be able to test in March, and as soon as the results come back, be able to interview and find that ideal candidate.
Okay.
So it'd be mid-year next year before we would be looking at a final resolution to it.
And is Brian good to stay that long?
I think there's a willingness to do so. He doesn't want to make a second career of it, but it looks as though we'll be able to make that happen.
Okay, thanks.
Frank.
Thanks, Jim. Leah, three items. First, maybe the easiest one. The when we built the towers, there was an interest in the state in participating in the expense, and then it sort of fell by the wayside. Have they come back, or have you heard anything about them that coming back online where they might contribute something to that cost?
They have not come back, and that I don't want to give you a real long answer, but what was created last year in the 2010 state budget, 10 and 11, and then carried over to this year was the creation of a new Office of Interoperable and Emergency Communications, and they fall within the newly merged Department of Homeland Security and Emergency Services. And the stated objectives of that office are to create some form of a statewide radio communication system. And implicit in that is a build out of a system of systems that would bring together numerous radio systems in the state. They've funded a grant program for the first budget year of $20 million. It's to move in the next fiscal year to $45 million and eventually reach a statewide goal of $75 million annually that would be used to support construction and maintenance of interoperable radio communication systems. Unfortunately, thus far, there is no permanent commissioner to emergency services and homeland security. There is no permanent director appointed to the Office of Interoperable Communications, and there is no board which is supposed to guide the development of that policy. So this is all getting kind of stretched out over a period of time. My hope and my expectation, and I think the intention of the legislature, was that eventually they would be working with the counties, specifically with the counties, to develop and maintain interoperable linked radio systems. I still have hope that we will see some income, but I don't have hope that we're going to see it in the next 2 or 3 years.
You think it'll be retroactive since our system is up and running?
Well, speculation, but I doubt that it would be retroactive, but I think that we have a strong case to negotiate a large percentage of future maintenance and replacement costs.
Okay, number two, you mentioned FEMA and the disaster aid. Was the category that you were talking about just the municipal category that we were declared, not the personal homeowners and not the agricultural piece?
That's correct. It's strictly the municipal-related pieces, public assistance for local governments and nonprofit agencies.
Okay. The state has been talking about $15 million for agriculture, and the feds have been talking about reimbursements there. At some point, you may hear about that, too. Who knows?
We're in contact with the USDA representatives, and they've got a more or less independent outreach program that they use to work with agriculture.
The last one goes to your fourth bullet. Equipment replacement remains at zero. Is there any equipment in that category that we're not replacing that's putting us in some sort of jeopardy, or is there a concern because we're not replacing or updating equipment? And what would it be?
Not right now is my answer, in that the radio system itself is it's about the three-year mark, and much of that equipment is should be good for 7, 10, 12 years or more. The computer-aided dispatch, mobile data record system, is all brand new as of this year. you've got an aging telephone system that went up with the center that should have a lifespan of about 10 years, and we're into the seventh year of it. So we need to be looking ahead toward that. But I would tell you that probably outside of highway and ITS, I would think our department is probably one of them, is second or third as far as equipment intense programs or departments that you have. Literally, thousands of radios and hundreds of computers and monitoring systems and telephone and workstations and all those things together. And as I was mentioning before, we've been fortunate that we've been able to build that into the capital programs that we go. But eventually, through routine use, we're going to need to be able to replace that. And it, in a longer term, I need to provide to you a long-term capital replacement or equipment replacement program. And we need to figure out some way to start building reserves for that routine replacement of equipment. It's a recipe for disaster if we don't start looking ahead 5, 10, 15 years to when these components wear out. We'll be right back where we were 10 years ago with failing equipment if we don't construct a future replacement program. Now, back to your question with the state. If we're able to eventually negotiate agreements, if the economy improves with the wireless carriers so that they're ready to expand, if some of the federal broadband initiatives pan out with the building of a nationwide public safety broadband network, all those factors could fold into the next generation work that we do and provide that funding stream. But it's far from certain that those things will happen.
Thank you.
Carol.
Yeah, two things. Am I confused? I'm either confused like my colleague across the way or I want to cry. Do I understand correctly that even for this area that is both a federal and a state priority, emergency communications, somehow, although it's a federal and a state priority, our local budget is going to need to absorb an 8.2% rise to absorb the costs inherent in the activity?
Well, I think most of that 8.2% really relates back to the fringe benefit changes to maintain the staff.
Okay.
But some of the increase is related to maintaining the radio communications.
And
system.
It isn't relieved by the fact that this year, if we can't even see enough federal and state support in this area, there's really no hope for the rest of our budget. My question is about the FEMA, the need arising out of the recent storms. If we can apply for FEMA assistance to deal with the other areas, and if emergency communications is sort of part of what was an increased cost due to the storm. Is there no way to build into the application from FEMA so that we can cover those costs rather than having the additional costs, rather than having to absorb those ourselves too?
Well, those funds are for direct losses or storm damages incurred. Our facilities didn't incur those. You might look, if you had an urgent need where your system was impacted by the storms, you might be looking toward mitigation funding that were out there, but that's really not applicable in this case.
Okay, increased staff time or use of whatever it is we needed to buy extras of wouldn't be considered due to the storm.
Right. Now, the staff time that's involved in helping recoup these monies, that administrative cost is underwrote by your organization pursuing it.
Just to follow up on that, so one of the things that came up at our Facilities and Infrastructure Committee meeting last week had to do with the need for the equipment in the highway vehicles.
Okay.
You know, being needed for something like the storm, and that those haven't been updated. So that kind of thing, if we're finding our capabilities lacking due to storms.
Well, your capabilities, I think you are.
Find ways in terms of interdepartmental charges to.
That's an interesting point. I think what you're indicating is that the highway department has a need to replace their radios, and the logical thing is for them to become a part of the county system on a routine basis. Part of what they're up against is the narrow banding decree, whereby the old radio system that they're operating with, it will be inoperable after the end of 2012. And without a replacement of the base station, staying on the same frequencies, changing their patterns, and buying new radios to stay where they are, they won't be operable. And logically, they should move over. The problem is that every agency in the country who hasn't moved to a modern system is under that same decree, has that same challenge, and there's just an extreme limited amount of money that's even available through grants to get them to a narrow-banded case.
Martha.
In the program summary sheets, we've got three programs: emergency communication system, emergency response coordination, and public safety answering point, 911. The 2011 staff numbers are listed, and they add up to 27.5. The 2012 staff numbers add up to 24, and and the dollars are all similarly lower. Is that what would that 2012 number? Is that what would be under the if we were held to the cap?
Yes.
Okay. Thanks.
Leslie.
Thank you, Lee. I just want to follow where the state aid reduction is in this budget, because there are several places. You said the public health portion of it.
Right.
But I don't see a reduction under the budget pages of Section 3129.
What I did, maybe this would help explain it, is that we had three programs, 3410, 3411, and 4189, if you're looking at those account numbers. And the 4189 was created under public health several years ago so that we could take advantage of the reimbursement. And I rolled that program, those positions, back into the department programs, took them out of the health department because there was no, it made no sense to continue to apportion out portions of positions for funding that no longer exists. We were carving out $100,000+ out of a $3 million budget in order to be able to receive that reimbursement. With that program gone, we simplified and put them into the PSAP and communications program and kept the positions whole rather than apportioning them across two or three program areas.
Okay, I follow that. So how much of that funding are you talking about? The entire 121,762?
No, the revenue lost is $30,000.
That's the $30,000.
Correct.
Okay.
Mike Klein.
Lee, I'm looking at your OTR 025, which is your second priority. If that were funded at less than full amount, for example, if it was funded for 1.5 positions, what would that do to your department?
It would 0.25.
That's the 2.5 emergency service expansion.
Yeah, that's the equivalent of two full-time dispatchers and plus fringe benefits. And so a reduction in that would reduce at least some hours of dispatchers. It may reduce a full-time position to a proportion of that, or it might take out one full-time person, depending on how much you're thinking on a reduction of that line.
Well, I was reading in the narrative there, it says that you, with this, you'll be able to have the optimum or without it, you wouldn't be able to have the optimum coverage. What would we be losing if we didn't have the optimum coverage?
Rather than having a minimum of four people per shift, 24 hours a day, minimum coverage of four people, somewhere you would have to reduce that to less than four people. You might have three people on an overnight shift several times a week. Or you might reduce a supervisor's position in order to keep the positions filled as far as call taking and dispatching. We'd have to reconsider that, and part of that would come from the analysis we do through the consulting report.
Thank you.
Pam.
I just want to confirm that the total amount that you lost from the health department EMS funding was $30,000, you said?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
In rough numbers.
Okay.
Martha and then Brian.
If to Mike's question, if we reduce the dispatcher's roster, would you be covering more? Would you have more overtime expenses?
Likely.
Is there any way to estimate that?
Well, 1.5 times whatever you cut, if you attempted to fill those hours, but more than likely we would look toward actually reducing the staffing. The problem with this whole scenario is that typically with a staff of 21 dispatchers, We're at the first time in 3 years that we're at full staffing. We had a series of disabilities and vacancies, which ultimately resulted in overtime costs to cover those positions. So we've historically not been able to see reductions because of other factors that are involved. The other problem with it is that we're trying to move toward additional training for the dispatchers, and so a reduction in basic staffing to cover the floor further aggravates that ability to take people out and provide specialized training, supervisory, targeted training to enhance skills and so on. You know, you're really to a point where when you start reducing that staffing, it's not only the ability to cover, but the ability to develop your staff that's hurt by it.
And I see on page 127, your overtime budget is down considerably from what it was last year and the year before. So is that because you anticipate needing less since you're now at full staffing?
We're hopeful.
Hoping. Okay. Thank you.
Hi, Brian Levslin. Carol.
I guess I would just kind of point out again after Mike's question was that we're coming up with staffing numbers without the benefit of the consultant study. I'd be a little bit fearful of cutting too much because they may very well come back and say, not only do you need what you have, but you may need more. So there'd be that much more to cut.
Is that a question? Levslin.
Then I was going to say, right?
Good, that's a good one. I was like, let me formulate a question.
Lee, the agreement that we have with the City of Ithaca requires us to maintain a certain staffing level to provide those services to the city. Isn't that correct?
Correct.
We have to have a certain fire dispatcher, police dispatcher,
A dedicated position
a dedicated
for city
position for,
police
for those
dispatching.
Things. Okay, so if we slice down that, how are we affecting that agreement? If our staffing levels get cut, okay, don't answer that.
It would be difficult to do. You would have to probably move a supervisor into another floor position, and they wouldn't truly be supervising.
That would not be nice.
They would be dispatching other functions.
Right.
It would cause some reconfiguration.
Yeah, I have a question.
We'll talk more.
Excuse me.
Sorry?
Go ahead.
That's fine. Yeah. I'm done.
And was Brian done, too?
He is. Carol, okay. Your turn.
Yes.
Please go ahead.
I'm looking at the contracts on Appendix C, page 4, and that there's $712,500 for Motorola. You took. Is that is that equipment or maintenance? And is that, it's any of that, anything
of
that we could put off into the next year to
tide
over our staffing and do pieces of it in 2013?
The bulk of that was negotiated with the system purchase in 2005, and it covers the 24-hour maintenance of the system and monitoring by the company, as well as the on-site support. It also covers all of the software licenses related to the system. And what we did at the time was to take the packages that were offered and negotiate a price in the $600,000-plus range that we would commit to for a period of time in order to save several hundred thousand dollars over the course of the contract.
So is there a point at which it will make sense for us to take over our own maintenance of that? Would it be more cost-effective to... hire somebody who knows how to do it?
At maybe the 10-year mark, you would want to take a look at that and possibly remove some of the hardware support or relook at that. The most important part is to be able to maintain the software components and the licenses and have the continual updates. Then the issue becomes making sure that you've got proper funding to keep the hardware moving forward to accommodate those software changes.
Okay. And last one. Is there a local Motorola contractor that does this, or is we sending this off to Motorola somewhere else?
They subcontract with local shops that are here, and they're essentially in our building every day of the week. We had two technicians over the weekend that were there through the holiday that were working on system-related problems. So there are local shops that are subcontracted and provide those services and are essentially in-house with us.
Any other questions? Thank you, Lynn. You're done. Is the sheriff in the house? Is he here?
Trolling pride, really.
You want to do Sean, sir? Or is he here?
May I present the sheriff of the
county? Sheriff.
I want to thank everybody tonight. I'm obviously the rookie here tonight. So they're my first presentation, so probably the oldest rookie you've ever had in front of you. But anyway, the task of putting the budget together was interesting, to say the least. And I know that during good times, if you could present a budget that stayed status quo, that was doing a great job. And we know now during these times, that's got to be done even better than status quo. So we did our best effort here, my team did, to present you with a budget that I hope that we can get passed and continue to go on to 2012. You can obviously, you've seen the expenditures. We were able to cut the expenditures down to $85,091 total is what we felt we could do in 2012. Our staffing remains the same, and that was obviously our hopes to maintain our staff, because it's important to have the proper amount of people to accomplish the tasks that we need to accomplish every day. As you can see here, we wanted to make sure we kept, as I said, the staff, the sergeant, one sergeant's position, and a deputy sheriff's position. We did not want to lose them. We also then and over target another deputy's position. We were able to save $80,000 in vehicle replacement, which is always very important with rollover. So that was a savings that we could do a one-time savings. Just quickly with the sergeants and why they're so important, obviously it maintains the supervisory coverage, encourages patrol coordination, obviously can help decrease the county's potential liability because our sergeants obviously are seasoned veteran officers and have been around and experienced many different tasks that they can reflect to the deputies on the road what they need to do and the handling matters that become very significant that are done properly so that we don't have to worry about making false arrests or whatever. And also it's the sergeant's responsibility along with the captain to maintain the overtime expenses down as low as we can, and I'm happy to say in the last 9 months we have accomplished doing that and we'll continue to do that in 2012. The two deputy positions at the current level of the department is below DCJS recommended staffing that they did, I believe, in 2004. They came here and looked at our department and recommended the necessary people that they felt that this county needed to maintain the level of protection and safety for the county. We did not increase that at all that I'm aware of, but we surely do not want to lose anybody at this point in time. As we all know, when times are difficult, calls for service increase. They do not decrease, and that's our main concern, to at least to be able to continue giving the service that we have been giving. We also would like to obviously preserve those extra amenities that we do, the DARE program, Neighborhood Watch, the Marine Patrol. We all know that was cut, but then the state did reinstate half of the reimbursement after the Sheriff's Association lobbied for that, and we were lucky enough to get that back. But those programs are very important in maintaining that personal relationship with the community, those programs you see at the bottom. Again, over target requests above the property cap. We wanted to, not to lose any of these supervisory positions, so that's where that sergeant position comes in to maintain the seven sergeants that we have, one of them which is not road patrol, that's in the civil. They run the civil department. We also asked for a half a position, and how dare anybody ask for any position at this point in time, and we realize that. But this was a very difficult task to even ask for this, but we really felt obligated to at least let everybody know that at one point in time in our civil division, we had five non-sworn support staff in there. We are now down currently to three. And unfortunately, this year has been very stressful in that department. We obviously had one of our staff go off on disability leave shortly after April or early May, and now it just finally came back to full time. That has put us drastically behind in that civil division in our various tasks and duties that we have. So that's why we asked for the half position. It would be great, obviously, to have a full position, but we really felt that we at least had to ask for a half a position. We have been fortunate enough to be able to hire a part-time person on and off throughout the year, and Rodney has been somebody that's been shared throughout the county. He does such an excellent job, and we had him help us, and he surely has helped us in there, but we still just can't even catch up on our task, even with somebody that's helping us, because they don't know how to do the things that we need to do extra. So, again, as we know, the civil department is a mandated department, and staffing levels. This is what I've been speaking to, has caused crime reporting. We're behind 9 months in the crime reporting stats, IBRs. Pistol permits, another function of our civil department, we're behind at least 3 months. Again, because of being short-staffed. This division does generate revenues various different ways that we do that and collections. So it is one of the ways we can get some revenue, and that's why another is very important for us to be operating at maximum efficiency. In the jail budget, obviously we all know that's mandated, and it's one that we have to stay, with the minimum staffing and all the mandates that the state sets forth, and we have been able to operate that way. And again, we left the budget. The increases you see are ones that had to be increases with the expected possible board outs and things like that. Also, something that we noticed, and I think it's on the next slide, in our positions there, we noticed when we were doing the budget, one of the positions, for some reason, and we have no explanation, that's where the $69,570 comes in. That money wasn't in the budget this year for whatever reason, and I don't know that Joe or anybody can speak to that, but I don't have an explanation. We discovered that when we were doing the budget and asked that obviously be corrected. And I know Mr. Squires just made me aware of that we were obviously over in the salary overtime / aspect of the corrections, and this is obviously one of the explanations of why we are. So that is why that's back in there. Obviously, as I stated, the corrections officers, it's mandated staffing requirements. That's what you've seen here with the numbers that we have given you. Hopefully prevents increased overtime. That the overtime in the jail is not where I would like it to see it to be, and we need to concentrate on that more and plan on doing that. We've already started to address that some more because it is over. But again, we don't have a lot of control of that, depending on how many people we have to transport back and forth between different facilities and also and various trials and things that take place. So, but we are making the sergeants aware of we want them to be cognizant of it and do what they can to cut this back as much as possible. We have, as I stated, been able to do that on the road patrol side. That's my budget, and I'm obviously now prepared to answer questions.
Go ahead. Martha?
Thank you.
Martha, Peter, Pat. Go ahead.
Sheriff, the $69,000 for the corrections, you're saying you've had the full 44 on staff or 44.5, but $69,000 wasn't in the budget?
It looks like there was a mistake in the budget. I mean, it's as simple as that. It was underfunded in 2011. So when you multiply the positions times the salary of those positions, there is an underfunding, and the sheriff was right, of $69,570.
Was it? Was that the first year that was true?
I think so.
Okay. Does that? Okay. But you still paid people. Somehow all the people were paid.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. The overtime in the road patrol in the civil division looks, is very modest. But in the jail, it almost doubled in 2011 from the previous year, and stays and goes up again for 2012. What does something different happen?
Well, as we know, our population in the jail has been close to maximum for a good part of the 9 months of this year already. We have had more transports to do as far as courts, I believe. And I truly believe that, a better job needs to be done in there, recognizing that you have to look at other options before you start just calling somebody in to do a transport. And I've, you know, addressed that, and they've started to look at it better, but there's a lot more that needs to be done, and it's something that I plan on concentrating on. I'm ashamed to say that I haven't had the time, you know, to really put a you know, more a concerted effort on my part to go after, other than, you know, telling them that I expect them to do it. But I think we now need to sit down and get a true feeling of why they're not using some of the resources that I believe we have there with roving staff. So, and that's what we need to look at stronger with the chief and the lieutenant.
Okay, I mean, that's really a lot of extra money. You know, 183 versus 93 in 2010. You recently got a grant for video equipment and all for arraignments, video arraignments, right?
Yeah, which is not obviously in effect at this point in time. We're still, you know, putting that together. But, yeah, that's our hope that, you know, these type of things, because that is what the state is looking for, obviously, too. And I'm sure in the juvenile section is where they're looking for that, because that's what they reimburse us for. So they pushed that very hard at the sheriff's meeting in January about the video conference. That's why they put the grant out there. That's why we went after it. And I'm hoping that it will obviously help with these type of expenses. So.
Well, would it help you sort of enforce the, you know, got to tighten our belts if, say, we took something out of that $103,000 target line? I mean, you know, we could be the bad guys. I mean, what would happen if that, instead of going up again, if that line went down, I'm looking at page 369, if that line went down closer to what it was in 2010, what would you have to do?
Well, as I stated, there, you know, there's aspects of overtime that you can try to manage, but there's also many aspects of overtime that we have no control over. So that's a very difficult question for me to answer because I don't know what the future holds in 2012 for the various things that we do not control. And, you know, there's certain things you can do. I can tell you, I can speak to the roadside. The men and women that have recently, with the problem we've had on the lake and knowing that we had to have more boat coverage, the men and women on the roadside were willing to change their shifts for us to help prevent overtime and give us the coverage necessary. The captain has worked very diligently with the sergeants to make sure that when we might have patrols that we can use for other special details, that we don't call people in for that. This is what I've needs to concentrate on with the jail staff to get them to start thinking outside the box as we have on the other side. And I just said, you know, I thought I was on the right track, and we need to go to that and discuss it more. And that's what our plan is, and they know that.
I'm glad you mentioned that. Just very quickly, page 360. That's the law enforcement side. So it went in 2010 from 2010 and 2010. To almost $392,000 this year. So I see you brought it down a little bit to 317. But those two lines, that's a lot of money when I add up those two lines. The law enforcement budget with that line is page 360, and the jail overtime budget is on page 369.
Do you have another question?
May I?
Joe?
Not all, but a part of that, Martha, I believe on the law enforcement side, reflects the road patrol wage adjustment. So their pay rates are higher now. They still, you know, they settled 2 years, or we had an arbitration for 2 years mm-hmm. of road patrol wages. So you see that increase in the wage line, but you also see it in the overtime line. So the overtime rate has been adjusted for those arbitrated salary numbers.
That affects some of it. I'm sorry, but the 2010 salary and wages has a bump up, But it goes back down in 2011.
Yeah, I think that's kind of an anomaly of the accounting, and I looked at David. I believe in the number you see in 2010 may include the retroactive amount.
Okay.
The adjustment, so that would have bounced, and it would have come back down to something closer to 2009.
And that happened.
Yeah. But again, as you look at overtime, as you look at the 2012 wages, I think we have made the adjustment in there for the 2 years of wage growth. It was arbitrated, whatever that was, 6 months ago, 9 months ago.
Okay, so this we can also get at this by looking at number of hours, right?
Yes.
Paid for overtime.
Yeah. Right.
Could we get that for both for 09, 10, and 11, and then 12? So that'll sort out. If there's an extra salary adjustment in there, that won't
right.
be counted in as hours, right?
Yep, we yes. can try to do that.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
I have Peter and then Pat.
Yeah. Just to comment again, to comment some more on what the overtime issue. The Public Safety Committee has started to try to understand the overtime. And I've been looking at data from the Road Patrol. We don't have any data from the Corrections Department yet. But one impression I will give to you is that comparing the aggregate numbers year to year will get you no place whatsoever because things change and demands change. And unless you know more about exactly what is causing the overtime, overtime can be done for a variety of reasons, then you really can't attack the problem. And the data is not systematically kept in that way. And we do, with Sheriff's
all due respect, Peter, but do you have a question?
Yeah, no, I don't have it. I have a question at the end, but I just do want to...
If
you don't want me to finish, I won't finish. But
Marco.
I think I have something to add
That's
to it.
That's always good.
I don't particularly think that data will tell you a whole lot, whether it goes up or down. But there is other data that we're studying, and we will try to understand a little bit better exactly what's causing the overtime. So that's all I have to say. The one question I had... was about that 9 months delay in the crime reporting statistics. Is that a number which is going to continue to increase, or is there some reason to believe that without additional staffing, that we can take care of that, or will it simply grow with time? And is there any particular penalty for being off 18 months behind? Is there some particular reason why we should address that?
Let me speak to that as there is no penalty, okay? But there is, nobody's going to enforce a penalty on us. But there is a penalty, as you well know, Peter, because we use the statistics, obviously, to determine what might need to be increased or decreased. And you know that. You've looked at the statistics. So if they're not accurate, what have we got? Just that. Something that's relatively worthless. I'm going to be honest. We have been thinking outside the box, and we have been fortunate enough to get some help from other agencies to allow us to use their staff at their cost to help us with our IBR because we're so desperate and so far behind there. But I really can only go to that well so many times before it's going to go dry, and I think we need to definitely get our own help to do that, but I've been fortunate enough that somebody's willing, so I don't see us falling any farther behind at this point in time to answer your question.
Okay, thank you.
Joe, did you want to jump in here?
Yeah, I do, and I hope I don't trip over myself. It's one of the anomalies in the way we do our accounting here, and it relates to overtime, and it might help explain that large jump between 2010, the actual amount, and 2011 and 2012, the budgeted amounts. Okay, I'm going to try to explain how that works. As everyone knows, overtime is 1.5 times your regular pay. And when we account for that expenditure, when David enters that into our books, that 1.5 is split into two pieces. The straight time, the 1, is charged to the salary and wage line. The 0.5 and our accounting is charged to the overtime line. So when you look at the actual overtime, you see the 0.5 element of overtime. The one shows up in salaries and wages. When we budget, we do it differently. We budget 1.5 in the overtime account. So the reason you see part of it doesn't explain it all, but a lot of that jump between the actual and the budgeted relates to the way we account for overtime and the way we budget for overtime. And that explains, so if you just took the 210 actually spent in 2010 and you brought that up, because that was the 0.5, and that would really explain almost all of the increase between the actual amount and the budget amount of overtime.
But doesn't that system work every year? So why
it does every year. So every time you look at a budget, you will see a budgeted amount that should be higher than what the actual expense shows in the prior year. So we budget at 1.5 in the overtime line. We expense at 0.5. With the other one, the straight time, showing up in the salary and wage account. So the big jump you see here is more of an accounting anomaly than it is a request for significantly more money to be set aside for overtime.
Okay, another reason I'd like to see hours.
I think that would be the best way to explain it, if we can. And we can also kind of show you, if we accounted for it in the same way that we budgeted for it, we can kind of work backwards and show you how that 2010 actual might have looked if we did it that way.
I have Pat, I have Carol, I have Frank, and then back to you, Peter.
The questions I had have to some extent been addressed, but what I'm thinking about is, could these figures be compared to previous years, and would we see then the same? I have two or three questions, but could they be compared to previous years then, Joe, according to what you just explained? And we would see that same kind of pattern in
yes.
previous years?
You'd see it in prior budgets. You would have seen the same kind of variation between actual and budgeted expenditures. And if what you'd like us to do is to kind of transpose those numbers, to take the actual numbers and bring them up to time and a half, so you can compare the budget that we have here in 2012 to prior amounts that have been spent, we can do that for you as well.
Well, that would probably be very helpful.
Okay.
The other thing, Ken, is that you mentioned two factors that I recall that have to do with overtime being up this year. One of them, the jail has been very full, I think you said. And the other had to do with out-of-town transport. You had to do a lot of out-of-town transport. I'm wondering if you could provide for us a comparison of the numbers for this year to, say, the previous two or three years.
I'm sure we can do that, sure. Yeah, I'd be glad to do that. We could put that together.
Because I would think that that would also give us some sense of whether or not we, you know, whatever those numbers show, and then looking at the need for overtime this year, there should be some comparison there also.
Sure. I will address that tomorrow with the staff and to get something together.
Okay. Thank you.
Carol.
Yeah. Before we trip all of ourselves, looking for accounting anomalies to explain these things, I do note that the overtime, it would probably be worth it to correlate amount of staffing we devote on a regular basis with the overtime. So I note that at least on the road patrol side, the overtime went way up in the year that we reduced the road patrol staff by two people.
Right. Your question, please.
So my question is, I guess for either Ken or Joey, do you agree that that might explain if we went from 26 in road patrol to 24 in road patrol the same year that the overtime went up and we're now getting it back under control?
It's 25. I don't see where you see 24.
Let's not argue about the numbers. Let's try to get an answer.
3-356. So, I mean, do you see a correlation or is it worth looking at a correlation? Do you already see one in those areas where we we have either increased or reduced staff and the amount of overtime, or is it?
Well, again, anytime you reduce staff, obviously overtime can increase, all right? And as we've stated many times, some of the overtime, there's just no control, depending on the calls for service, what they are, and we don't control that, obviously. But what we have done is have looked outside the box and how we might be out of control overtime, and that's what we've been doing. And as I just stated, cooperation sometimes by the people changing their shifts alone can save overtime. So we've had that cooperation this year. So what you're trying to say is that even though we have less, the overtime has gone down, right? Is that how I understand your question?
No, on the road patrol side, when we went to less, the overtime went up. It's
last
not
year.
As clear on the jail side, but another question would be, do you anticipate there being a period of adjustment where you somehow have to cover reduced staff with overtime, and then
we'll look at it,
and then get to build in other ways of doing things gradually.
Hi, Frank.
Thanks, Jim. Sheriff, the law enforcement budget 3113 and the corrections budget 3150. A couple of questions on each one of them. In both of them, you significantly reduce the professional services costs. Do you want me just to ask you all the questions and then you can take them, or do you want me to do them one at a time? I think it's nice to see that you've reduced the professional services costs. What caused it?
I don't know that I can,
Okay.
I'd have to ask my team, how that came about, because that's.
All right, if you
I
could.
I will get you an answer for that.
The other is on the revenue side in both of those accounts. The revenue side, the federal aid has gone down in the sheriff's office significantly from 2009, and the state aid has also gone down in both of them. I know the state's budget is hurting, but what's causing the reflection here? The federal went to zero on both of them, and both the corrections side and the law enforcement side. Have they been restored someplace else?
Yeah, again, I'd have to ask the...
Well, they don't really have a dedicated federal source. It's it fluctuates from their ability to get grants. You know, it's not like they have a dedicated annual amount of federal aid.
So you
state,
think
there's some programs that are dependable on the state side, but the federal.
So think the federal ones are all grants, David?
Yeah, okay. I mean there's no revenue stream. It's all they have to apply for. It can fluctuate from year to year.
Go to the corrections budget a minute, 3150, and go to the other supplies line. In 2009, other supplies was $292,000. It's down, projected to $255,000. That's a significant drop in other supplies. I'm pleased personally to see the savings or the projected savings. But are we sacrificing something there that we really we shouldn't be? I don't know what's driving approximately a $40,000 reduction from 2009.
Frank, are you comparing the 2011 number to the 2012 number, or what we actually spent in 2010?
I'm comparing the 2009 actual.
The 2009 actual.
And the two, okay. And then just zipping over to the 2010 actual, which went up to $284,000, or down to $284,000. Now the 2011 modified, is that only through the date that this budget was prepared? Or
It's through the middle of the summer. So the modified budget will pick up, was it June, I think, the June numbers? So as we looked at the budget, the sheriff was basically saying, I can live with a stable budget between 2011 and 2012. Okay. So that's what we were looking at. So there's stability there. And I'll go backwards a little bit, too. I think the same can be said for the professional services.
Okay.
There were some bumps in the prior years, but in terms of 2011 versus 2012, I think the professional services are also flat from year to year. Yep.
Okay. I mean, that I was thinking, boy, that's quite a savings. That's really nice.
It's not something that, you know, we've not been looking at, and we've had this discussion that, this week. There's things in that supplies and where you see that savings now, which probably may not be a saving because it was back in June when we get to the end of the year. There are areas that there's not a lot we can do in the jail to cut, other than start paying attention to the overtime and see if there's ways to, modify by using personnel that's available to us rather than just going to the phone and calling in. But with the supplies, we've been addressing that with the team, and we are looking at that seriously because I feel that there is room to cut in supplies, and we just need a better accounting of that. It hasn't been there in place, and we're starting to put that into effect now. Professional services, we have a new nurse. And I'm grateful that we do have her because she surely is cognizant of how to save monies, and so is the doctor, and we've been working there. So I'm hoping that we can continue that, and it will be a savings for years to come. So that is what we have addressed, and I can only hope that we'll be able to continue that.
Thanks.
I have Peter Loveland, Martha Brian Pat. So be patient.
Yeah, I'll try to be fast. I have no question. I want to make a comment about a lot of things that were discussed here. I've been looking at the overtime budget, and I think the data you're asking for is almost impossible to get. It's very difficult to look at the overtime expenses without looking exactly what the people do. And I know that I worked with Derek to get 2 weeks of data at what people do this year for overtime, and it was very difficult for him to supply that. A lot of effort went into that. Ray Bunce is now doing the same thing for the corrections operation, and that too is taking a long time. To ask them for comparison of whole year's worth of overtime in terms of the task that was done a year ago and comparing year to year is, I believe, will get us no place and cause them an enormous amount of work.
Thank you for that. Do you have a question?
No, I said I didn't have a question.
Oh, gee, I shouldn't have let you do that. Leslie.
Thank you. Jill, I appreciate the explanation about the overtime. I'm actually looking at my 2007 budget, and I don't see any line that's as clear about overtime there.
Well, that's the beauty. If there's beauty in this budget, you can actually see what the overtime line is.
Which is great. So what I'm asking you to do is that explanation that you gave, will you put that in writing along with where the numbers fall out?
Yes, I will.
Because that will help me to remember. My question for the sheriff is, you on your slide mentioned earlier about our numbers being below what DCJS recommend. That's for the civil side, not the deputies, corrections is different, not the deputies, but it's just civil unit.
The study addressed the whole department, so it did address the road side and the civil side. Yes, it did.
So I might have missed the numbers, but what is the recommended number staffing levels that DCJS is in
the civil? Yeah, they had recommended, I believe it was five.
There's five, but you have three now.
We have three.
But you said they addressed the entire deputies and that side. Is there something for deputies as well?
Well, the deputies, I believe, the study, I wasn't available. I don't. Derek could explain, but
Derek,
I think they
said
10.
Derek, can you speak to that? You need a microphone, Derek.
I mean, is this a study that was done a few years ago, Derek?
2003.
Okay.
Yeah, this was a study the New York State DCGS did in 2003. Mm-hmm. At the time, it recognized that our civil division had five staff members in it. At the conclusion of the study, it found that number to be sufficient. Mm-hmm. It didn't recommend more. It said it was sufficient. So now, obviously, we're down to three. It's much more than what they said was sufficient. For the road patrol deputies, we were down, I believe it was almost eight positions, and they have not been filled, to my knowledge, since that time. and that's why it's concerning to us. We definitely don't want to lose any more. We're below already of what is recommended. So,
so where are you, 23 or 24 now? What's your number?
The actual number that's working road patrol right now is 22. There are some other deputy positions who I think may bring it up to 24, 25.
The actual number, because this...
It says 25 thing, on page 356.
Yeah, that sounds right.
On 350, I don't know where you're seeing 25, Martha. I'm seeing
road
24.
Road patrol deputy, it was 26 for 2 years, and then 25 in 2011, and 25 for 2012.
Yeah.
I have 24.
We have 24.
I handed out. This is one of those replaced pages.
Hold on, one at a time.
This was a replaced page, and this was before I changed the color of the pages at the request of legislators. So everybody got a copy, but I don't know if everybody had a chance to replace the page.
Okay, what's the number?
24.
24. Thank you.
Oh.
And so we are down 8 from that 24, or 8 from 22?
I don't have the study in front of me, but, yeah, I think it was 8, yeah.
Why do we only have 22 when the numbers say 24?
Because we have positions that we have to fill with road patrol deputies that aren't assigned to the road. We have a civil deputy. We have two people assigned to the airport, stuff of that nature.
I see. Thank you. Now, one last question. And is DCJS like OSE, the one that does the jail? And if we don't meet these numbers, there's some potential sanction or something? Or this is just a recommendation?
No, this is the study they just,
Okay.
No, there will not be.
Thank you. We don't like sanctions.
Thank you. Peter, I understand it's complicated to figure out the overtime, but it must be knowable, and I'd like to know more about it. If we're writing checks for this, somehow it must be knowable how many hours are worked. So, and I assume that the variability is, it'll wash out if you look at enough years in a row. A question to the sheriff. If you, on the OTR 119 that didn't get approved for the halftime civil position, if you had, say, one-time money so that you could hire somebody, not just depend on other departments to loan you somebody, that could help you get caught up, would that be productive if you, rather than adding a target position, but give you another staff person or half or whatever so that you could reduce that backlog? Would that be helpful?
I'll let my civil man speak to that, but yes, I believe. That's why I brought these people with me, because I knew this.
Obviously, in the times, anything we can get is going to help us. Obviously, the long term, what I look out for our office, as well as anybody that's been up there, is we need a full-time, obviously. Unfortunately, given budget times, we are only doing the half request. A lot of people don't understand what the civil division does up there. It's not just civil. It's civil division, records division, pistol permits, administrative functions with three people. So would it help? Yes. Would it keep us up long-term? I'm not so sure of that.
Thank you.
Would you just say your name for the record?
It's Jeremy Ziegenfuss. I'm a sergeant up there at the sheriff's office.
Thank you.
Brian, Pat.
I was going to speak to the overtime, but there's so many variables in there that's even hardly worth speaking about. But, Kevin, as long as you're at it, if you're going to do all that work, try to find out how many 207Cs were sprinkled in there, and you have a preferred staffing that you have to maintain, and if you have people out on comp, plus the fact that it's a 24/7 operation, it's event driven. The only thing you can hope for is that overtime is not schedule driven.
Question.
It is what it is. It's much like what Gwen has to go through a lot of times with, you have a couple of homicides and you have expert witnesses that you have to get in. You're certainly not planning on it, but, it comes up and you have to do it.
We're doing comments tonight. That's good. Do you have any more?
No, you had a question. The question was, can he look for how many 207Cs?
And the DA thanks you, Brian. Pat.
I'll pass. Thank you.
Mike?
A couple of questions, Ken, please. One, are there any part-time folks working in your sworn employees at this point?
No, there's not. Contractually, we're not allowed to do that at this point in time. It is one of my objectives, and I hope to maybe be able to accomplish that.
Okay. The other thing I wondered is about boarding out. Are we still boarding out all the females?
Not all of them, no. We can only take so many. I think the number is 11, and we had an extraordinary amount of female prisoners this year and had to board them out. Right, only a few days ago, we only were boarding out juveniles. The numbers have been down recently, so that has helped, obviously, in the board out cost. But we can only keep 11, so not all the females are boarded out. But once we hit the mark of 11, we have to start boarding them out. And we've had, as the DA can attest to, quite a few female prisoners this year.
Do we board out more female than male prisoners?
I would venture to say probably not, just because usually the tendencies are we don't have a lot of females. But that could be, that maybe this year it might be a possibility we'd have to look. I think probably not.
And how do we choose where we board out? Is pricing from different
neighboring
counties
pricing,
different?
The pricing is the same everywhere. The jail, the correction side has continued to board out where, you know, the previous administration has, Tioga, Chemung, and I think Shenango. But very seldom Schuyler, but once in a while Schuyler. That's a choice. I know one of them helps us with the transports, one of the counties. I can't think which one right now. But, of course, Tioga is relatively close. So,
how is that rate established? Is it a state-established rate?
No, I'm not sure. I would have to ask, and I can do that easily with the Schuyler County. Because I know it's. I think the individual counties come to it, but everybody's pretty much standard. It doesn't become like a bidding war, where somebody can drop the cost. Because obviously they do entail cost at the jail to have these people there, so they're surely not going to undercut themselves. So, but most all the prices are, I know they're the same. So,
thank you.
Anyone else? Thank you, Sheriff.
Thank you.
We'll go to the...
I'm Gwen Wilkinson. I'm the district attorney. I think my budget might go a little quicker than Sheriff Lansing's because you'll be happy to know I have no overtime. That's just a little overtime joke. This year's budget process was particularly difficult for us because we are asked to make the 11.2% cut our base budget. In order to make this make sense, what I have to explain is, in order to make that 11.2% cut, I had to cut two lawyers, which is really kind of a fiction because I can't begin to represent that I could ever do business down to lawyers. And then in bringing the budget up to the 7.8% cut that would be represented by the 5.4% tax levy, I added in what amounted to $38,000. So I had to make my first OTR. In fact, why don't we just go to that slide? It makes a lot more sense. I had to make my first OTR, office supplies and equipment, which was not my highest priority, but was the only thing I could buy for the amount of dollars that would move us from 11.2% cut to 7.8% cut. The only thing I want to say about that is that this actually represents probably most accurately what it costs us to do business on average. We had tried to make more substantial cuts with respect to operating costs, office supplies, and equipment. We just couldn't do it. We made a plan for the 2011 budget, and we couldn't make it work. So although our first OTR, which is supported by the cap, is office supplies and equipment, that isn't our highest priority. The highest priority is the second OTR, which is the two lawyers. Happily, both of these are supported by the property tax cap and have been recommended by the county administrator. But we actually had to turn our priorities inside out in order to fit the formula that the legislature asked us to use in creating our budget. So what we have is a budget that basically lets us continue to do business. It's a status quo budget in some ways, although it does preserve the previous staffing cuts that I made year before last, in fact. And it allows us to continue to have representation in the special court parts, which, as you know, are two treatment courts, the sex offense court, the integrated domestic violence court. And just looking down the road, we know from Chief Judge Littman, we are going to have another, in all likelihood, another special court part soon, which is going to be the juvenile court part for 16 and 17-year-old offenders. I think it's likely that we're going to see that in this calendar year. It's going to make huge differences across the board in the way we deal with younger offenders, and it will also create one more special court part. The budget that we have submitted for this year will also allow us to continue to appear in the justice courts at the level we currently do. We currently have 18 regularly scheduled appearances in the justice courts per month. All of those are pretrial conferences. This doesn't count arraignments, preliminary hearings, or anything that comes up on a generated by new arrests or new crimes. This is just normal doing business. It will permit us to continue to prosecute the traffic offenses that make up a huge part of the local docket. And here when I refer to them, I'm talking about the non-criminal offenses, which were actually not mandated by law to prosecute, but which it would be an enormous inconvenience to justice courts if we weren't able to maintain a prosecution presence in those cases. And basically this budget, I think I can say with good conscience, meets current public safety needs. Certainly doesn't exceed them, but with the budget that has been presented for your consideration, I think we can say that we can do the job the way it needs to be done. And with that, why don't I open the floor to questions?
Yes. Nathan.
Gwen, your DA investigator position, have you had any luck filling that position?
Yes and no. The DA investigator position, for starters, is not in my target budget. The position shows there, but no local dollars.
Okay.
The retirement package was vetoed by the governor.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And I am in the process of evaluating a couple of options of how I could fill that position. I intend to get it filled shortly. I haven't decided whether I'm going to try to hire somebody with regular county retirement or whether I'm going to try to staff the position through a conduit through another local law enforcement agency.
So do you feel confident that you would need that position at its full?
So it's not
in the target budget then?
It is not.
It's in the budget.
No local dollars are paying for it.
Oh, no local dollars are paying
right.
for it.
Right. Okay. My target didn't go up by the addition of that position.
Right. Okay. All right. But it's still part of your
yes.
the budget.
The position appears in the budget. That is correct.
Right. So I'm sorry. I'm getting the terminology mixed up because that actually is part of
it. It's unfunded. I'm paying for it.
Right. Okay. All right. Okay.
Perfect. Out of what I'm hoping will be some recurring money, some one-time money.
Joe, there's an expenditure in there for the position.
All right.
So if you look in salaries and wages, there's an expenditure in there for the position.
Right. Okay.
There are offsetting revenues down below.
I see.
So the
okay.
net is
all right.
zip.
That's
right.
To me.
That, as you may recall, yeah. when we created the position, yeah. was one of the negotiating points right. was that the county would not be prepared mm-hmm. to inject local dollars. And then my position was that I could fund it salary and fringe for a year, maybe a little more. Mm-hmm. And I'm gambling that this position is going to turn out to be sufficiently valuable. That value, I think, will be reflected to you. And I think you'll want to fund it, at least in part, in future.
Okay.
So that's where we are with that.
All right, great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other questions? Brian. And someone over here have their hand up? Brian.
Joe, so does that amount show up in the stop DWI thing? Because I see
the revenues.
No, the what is it? Page 123, salary and wages. There weren't any in 9 and 10, and now there's
that's something
one
I
for
can
83
explain.
Something.
I can explain that. There was a way they were accounting for a position. You can see further down where it says professional services. They were paying for a position. Stop DPUI was paying for a position in the district attorney's through professional services when it should have been in the payroll line. That's all.
Right.
Good. Any others? Thank you very much, Gwen.
Thank you. Always a pleasure.
Okay.
Thank you.
Glad,
yes,
thank
you.
To see you. Always.
Human rights. May I ask a question of Joe while human rights comes up? Joe, what constitutes premium pay?
Premium pay would be shift differential, longevity. Those would be the major ones.
And ultimately, when you'll see in actuals, when we have a disability. It'll show up as premium
in this
pay.
Case, district
but you
attorney,
don't.
It's probably a longevity.
Thing. It is in this case, yes.
So it's primarily like shift differential, longevity,
yes.
and that sort of stuff. Thank you.
Go ahead, Sean.
Okay. Our current budget, it's a small budget, quite tight, so the only options I had under our current instructions was to look at a position in order to meet the goals. And so one of the things that I had to do in our two different scenarios was to look at our paralegal position and reducing that to 17.5 hours. And as you can see, the first request would only restore it at 6 hours, which would be very difficult to hire somebody under those circumstances. Also, we're looking at Westlaw, which is our legal research program that we need in order to operate to conduct our research. And you can jump because I, yeah, mm-hmm. thank you. Mm-hmm. What we were seeking is at least the full restoration at 17.5 for the paralegal aid position, which would still be a reduction, as well as additional funds to continue to hire legal interns. We've been quite successful over the years, as you know, having legal interns from Cornell University and Ithaca College. One of the ways I just want you to know that we were able to really cut down our budget this past year, we had a young lady that we had from Dryden High School. We had her all through Cornell University as a graduate student. She just went off to law school, Buffalo Law School, this year. So we had her for 4.5 years, and it was wonderful. This Cornell University paid for the majority of her time that she worked at our office. So hopefully we'll be lucky again and get somebody like that once again. But we are seeking at least having the paralegal aid position at 17.5. If we are not able to have that with respect to the property tax cap, it's going to be very difficult for us to maintain our caseload. We have a statutory requirement to complete our cases within 180 days. We're quite successful. Sometimes we do go over 180 days because that's a short period of time. However, we're quite successful in, I would say, about 70% of our cases are done in a timely fashion. I was just looking on the Internet real quickly, just in case you had a question about how the State Division of Human Rights is doing. They only are successful getting 10% of their cases done during that statutory period of time. And matter of fact, most of their cases are between 2 and 3 years, and some are over a three-year time period. So that's it in a quick nutshell version, and I'm open for questions.
Anyone? Question? Leslyn, Carol.
Sean, I'm looking at your positions. There's only one paralegal in your office. When they there's two, and
yes.
Is one of them what you're talking about with the student intern, or no?
One of the paralegal positions, there's a senior paralegal position,
mm-hmm.
and then there's an associate paralegal. I'm referring to the associate paralegal position.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm referring to that one being reduced to the 17.5 hours.
Okay, so this is not the position that you have used an intern for. This exists itself, and then you've used interns to also help.
I did it for just part of the year.
Okay.
And that was only because Cornell University actually paid for it.
Right, no,
this semester, this last semester, she wanted to have a lot of extra hours because she was going off to law school, and she didn't have as many class hours to complete, so she actually gave us 3 days out of the week, and they paid for it. So that's just this past semester, just so you know that.
No, I understand that. Okay. I'm not sure you're hearing me. You have a paralegal aide, an associate paralegal aide. Right, and a senior paralegal aide.
Yes.
Neither of those positions is the one that they're both filled with somebody right now.
The paralegal aide position is not filled currently.
Okay, and that's the position that you were able to use an intern.
That's correct.
To help with. Thank you.
I want to point out to you that on the sheet you have, this is for the legislators that was passed out. Human Rights Commission has a full-time FTE of 43.03 in 2011. And while Sean would love to have that amount of people, that's not true. So there's a number that doesn't exist. So, Sean, for my benefit, what is your FTE?
3.5.
Right. Okay.
That's what's in here.
And I had Carol talk.
Yeah, the Westlaw license. Yes. The if the county has a Westlaw license, do we need to get to operate three separate of those for the attorney's office, the DA, and this office? Or
yes.
Any
software package, if you have a license, you pay per user. So that would be the same thing with Westlaw. You're paying for the license for the user.
Do any of those offices pay for more than one user?
I don't know. I don't know if the county attorney pays for more than one.
I don't know if the DA has more than one or not. I can't.
They may
recall.
Have more than one because they have more attorneys.
Right. It's per seat. So
per seat.
Yeah, wait, per seat. So
you let me for Westlaw, just so you understand with Westlaw, it depends on your contract. Some of the government contracts you would have a lawyer plus a paralegal. So sometimes you can get two for one for that one license. So it would vary. So I don't know how Gwen has it set up, but that would be the same thing for the county attorney. So the county attorney could have a license plus his paralegal, and that would be one license together.
Okay. I'm just wondering
but that's
if
as far
sense.
As they'll stretch it.
Yeah, I'm just wondering if it makes sense to have
one computer with one station, and people go and sit at that one station use it when they need to.
Yeah, this has become the equivalent of the old law library. So in terms of the resource for the attorneys, this is the most frequently used resource.
Right.
So, there'd probably be a waiting issue if everybody was waiting for that same computer. Plus, I think it violates the licensing agreement if
that's correct.
Worked it that way.
And it's also a cost saver because books are very expensive. So just to try to maintain the old library system, that is very costly. This is much cheaper.
Martha.
Thanks. Sean, is your rent in the rent that you pay, is that in the facilities budget?
That's correct, Martha.
Okay. And remind me when your lease is up next.
It should be coming up pretty soon. I don't know the exact date. But I negotiated a short-term contract in hopes that we would possibly be moving, but it'll be coming up pretty soon.
Okay.
I can get you the date later.
Yeah, that'd be great. Thank you.
Any other questions? Michael.
Sean, how's your caseload? What's happening?
The caseload is still about the same. We're still averaging a high number of employment discrimination cases. We're still looking at a high number of disability-related cases. And then I would say that would be followed by gender and then race. So we're averaging the same.
So about the same as last year, or
yes.
Up, or about the same?
No, it's about the same. We're not seeing that high of an increase. In fact, I think people, unfortunately, it's tough economic times, and people will come in, they will start a process, and then they will pull back because of concerns about their employment status. So we're seeing that happening a lot.
Any other questions? Thanks, Sean.
Thank you.
That's it.
Okay. Thank you.
Oh, by the way, you can have a break now if you'd like. The next meeting is the first voting meeting of the 2011 budget, and it will be 6 p.m. to 8:30. We have already discussed getting in our things. Kevin will do his very best to make sure that no one feels left out of being able to put things in to change the agenda. Also, I promised a meeting ago that we would have a discussion about rollover. The county administrator informs me that he is very willing to talk, take some time at the beginning of the next voting meeting to discuss rollover. Thank you all for coming, and we're done.